Today is the 20th of August, and it's the Electronic Real Estate Recording Commission meeting. We have with us on the phone two of our members, Pam and Ryan, right? Correct? Pam and Ryan, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
I can hear you just fine as well.
Super.
Thank you for setting this up.
Super. And then we've got Jeff, Teresa, Janine, and Mike here at this point. I know Bob will be not able to join us today, and we'll probably have Eileen joining us here a little bit later. So, the agenda that we've got here, any comments on the agenda, additions, corrections, other items? One item that I did promise my friends from the Department of Revenue that we would allow them to go first on the agenda after we approve the minutes so that they didn't want to have to stay for the rest of the day. I didn't want to have them be unproductive so that they had all the time that they needed to get the ECR data forward. So.
Every moment's important.
Appreciate it.
Hearing no other comments, are we okay to go ahead with the agenda?
I so moved.
It's been moved to approve the agenda.
I'll second.
Seconded by Jeff. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Let's go with the agenda. Next item on the agenda is the minutes from last month's meeting. I hope people had an opportunity to take a look at those in advance. Some very significant resolutions that are in that particular set of minutes about standards.
I read through it. I didn't see any.
Any comments, suggestions, corrections on those minutes? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
It's been moved by Jeff to approve. Do I hear a second? Second by Terry. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, the minutes stand approved. Why don't we go on then to item number 5 on your agenda. It's the ECRV discussion. And Gordon Folkman and I have been trading emails and messages now that we've got BlackBerries because I've been on vacation or he's not been in and we've been changing telephone calls. But they have graciously joined us again today to kind of give us an update on how things are progressing with the ECRV. And I do see some of our friends from the assessor's office here in Dakota County that I know they've been working with. And I know I've got some of my Hennepin County assessor staff here who are also anxiously starting to work with the folks over at the Department of Revenue. So with that, Gordon, I'll turn it over to you and Jason.
Should I come up over there? Where should I?
Wherever you're comfortable.
Okay. Sure.
Actually, right there. That
microphone. Okay.
Yeah.
If that's okay.
No, that's fine. Thanks, Mike. And yeah, it's been, I know we've been trying to get together here to come to one of your committee meetings, and I've had a terrible schedule at the end of session and the state board. So it was, and then I was on vacation, as you said. So it's good that my calendar allowed us to come today. And we do, I think, have some positive news to inform you about some of the progress we're making. I also want to introduce Holly LaRochelle.
LaRochelle.
Holly is a new member of our staff, and she's going to be helping working on a number of different projects, and hopefully she can help support ECRV as well at the department. But before I turn it over to Jason just to give an update in terms of where we're at, over the course of this year, with the help, too, from Bill Peterson and Tom May, helping trying to leverage some issues within our department, I feel very comfortable with the resources and the support we're now getting from the Department of Revenue and our technical staff to be able to really, support and provide a technical assistance in the further and completing the development of the ECRV, but equally important, I'm getting the commitment from our department to be able to provide the resources and support going forward. Once we are able to get a successful test application through Dakota County, I'm pretty confident that as other counties come on board, the process will speed up. We will be looking at additional maintenance and support funding down the road, but those are kind of discussions we can have ongoing as the project progresses. But I really want to really let the ERER task force committee here know that the department has placed the ECRV as its second or at least third priority within the department. And this is very important because the Department of Revenue has its major task as this thing called the GenTax system. And that, in my mind, is their first, second, and third real priority. That's a big, big initiative for the department. But in working with our commissioner and...
Hi, guys. Sorry about that. I got disconnected for a second there. Okay, got it.
Working with our commissioner, deputy commissioner, and chief information officer, we established a steering team within the department that oversees the ECRV project, and we are being given the commitment from the department, and it's pretty high on their list to get this done because finally got the recognition or let them realize how important it was for not only locals, local governments, county auditor's office, but for submitters. So I'm pretty confident that going forward, we have a pretty good environment to work with. And so with that, Jason, I'll turn it over to you to give everybody an update and then also maybe reinforce
sure.
some of the comments I made about how you feel you're working within the department, too.
Well, there is a handout in your packet here. It's a one-page handout mm-hmm. with some bullets. And I don't know about the people that are online. Do they have access to that? Or
they do not.
All right. So that someone will follow up with you on those, yeah. and I'll read the bullets as a result. So the first bullet is that Dakota County and there's the selected submitters that they're working with, which include Dakota Title and Stewart Title, I believe. Or
Dakota County Abstract.
Dakota County Abstract. Okay. They are testing and reviewing the county edit side of the function. So the last time we presented to you, I think in February, January it was, we showed you the submit side of the form, and that portion of the form is being reused in the county edit side, but there's also additional county information that's being entered in there. So they're reviewing the query page for selecting CRVs and working through them in the workflow and the edit side of the form. So functionally, the form is 99% complete and there. They're just ironing out the remaining issues that we find in testing and so forth. Dakota County has requested a production date of November 2nd, and the reason that they're picking that date is because it is sort of the completion of the equalization cycle that ends on October 1st. Basically, all CRVs are in a steady year until September 30th. And then there's 1 month delay where a CRV could be submitted and get into the cycle up to a month later. And so that's why they're picking November 2nd for that. The bottom bullet, which I'll just leap to here, is that there is a steering team meeting on October 25th. And so it's that meeting that will validate that that is the target that we're all agreeing to. But it's my personal feeling and the development team's feeling that we are trying to hit that target, that we're gonna hit that target for Dakota County. So, so that is what's happening on that. The third bullet is that we've gotten positive feedback on again from Dakota, and they are in presence, so they can give you their own feedback directly. And there are some remaining issues that need to be ironed out on the county edit side process. The next bullet is that, echoing what Gordon said, is that we've now got a full development team of five individuals. It actually toggles between, say, five and seven. There's part-time roles involved, led by a team with Jim Biggs within the Information Services Division, and they've been working on the project now since March. As you can imagine, there's a ramp-up process to getting them fully and formed in the application and the technology being used, and they've been changing some of the technology pieces underneath to comply with the way they would like to deploy the application within the DOR infrastructure. That process has been completed, so the entire way they would like to deploy it within revenue is done,
And we are doing, the next bullet is a final security review with the Office of Enterprise Technology that should be completed before the end of September. And that would be the last final stage as an official process that needs to occur before we could go to production. And they've been holding off on that security review until they completed the integration within the DOR environment. So that's some underlying detail of what's going on inside of revenue. And there's the next bullet is saying that, you know, the intention here is that Dakota will begin production in November with a limited number of submitters up front, maybe for a week or two. It's sort of up to them on how they want to proceed, but I think that's the sort of the intent, but that it would quickly ramp up as we gain confidence. The speed of that ramp up would go very fast, and they've indicated that they would wind up trying to proxy enter as much of the CRVs as possible to get as much of the CRVs into the electronic process as they can, even if original submitters aren't actually using the external form. Hennepin County was given access to the submit side of the form sometime in the spring. I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was somewhere in April or something like that. And Bill, May or April? Okay, yeah, I think May. And we've also given them access in an informal way to the edit side of the form. And I know that Tom has only had the briefest amount of time to spend with it, Tom Shear. But his initial reaction was positive, but then he said, you know, until we start working through the workflow, I can't tell you, you know, whether we think it meets our needs or not. So we're hoping to get to that process as soon as possible for Hennepin County so that they can get cycle through the process that Dakota has only in record time. And so we're planning on meeting next week or the following week with Hennepin County to actually formalize what the milestones are and what they're setting up their acceptance criteria process and so forth. And that's what the next bullet is that for every early adopter county then that we're ramping on board, they're going to follow this essential process of setting up planning meetings to establish what that process is and the milestones. That's the meeting we're trying to set up with Hennepin right away. Do the initial application walkthrough and some training of their people. Review and test the application in sort of a parallel shadow process with paper CRVs, and then go to production. Now, with Hennepin, since they have city assessors that they want to have some edit firewalls between CRVs, between city lines, that there is some additional functionality that we're going to write for Hennepin County that we aren't making available right away for Dakota because they do not have that need. But that functionality will be available to any county once it's written. After Hennepin, however, the intent is that we are not doing any development work. So the hope is that when we're done with the Hennepin cycle and Dakota has worked through it in production, that essentially we're more in a maintenance mode. That doesn't say that there isn't any changes that might be needed to streamline the process where needed, but that essentially the primary development work is completed. I'm in the process of contacting, or I have contacted, all the early adopter counties to get them sort of re-lined up and jump-started into the process, find out who really wants to go next after Hennepin. And so we'll start those meetings and discussions in the next month or so. And all of those early adopter counties represent someone from each of the consortia, from outstate or in-state, and from large to small. So all of those kinds of constituencies are covered in those early adopter counties. And as soon as one early adopter county is going, so one from maybe the MSIS consortia, that would mean that we can immediately start planning for a group of MSIS counties to come on board. And exactly how that, you know, plays out. One of the things that we're going to learn as we go through the Dakota cycle and the Hennepin cycle is, well, how many phone calls is revenue going to receive for assistance or help, support, public access, all of these kinds of issues. This is typically not an area where revenue has done before. Most of those things are either self-explanatory or have been handled by at the county level. So we don't want to get caught into a situation where we're trying to get 20 counties going all at once, and then we can't support the huge user community in the first 3 weeks and make it look bad. So we don't want to get caught in that situation. But we do want to ramp it up as quickly as we possibly can. And I know that from the consortium's point of view, they would like to treat counties in groups, but we will work through all those items during the next year cycle. Of course, that does mean that not all, you know, CRVs are going to be eCRVs, and when we hit the 50% mark of the entire state, which is roughly about 100,000 CRVs, I'm not sure, but Hennepin's 36,000 of them, or they were in 2005, so we should be getting a big chunk of them, you know, relatively fast. We've got Dakota, Hennepin, Anoka's on the list as an early adopter county, so we're going to get to a large portion of CRVs within the next 6 to 8 months or so. That is my list of bullets on that list. I know that we can take questions on that, and then I know that there was some questions about how to have the current CRV maybe work in hand-in-hand with, you know, the current paper process with your e-recording process. We can have a discussion about that as well.
Let me just ask, I think everybody would be interested, from what I'm hearing, your schedule for rolling out is a little bit more aggressive than what it was when you were here last winter. It sounded like it might be 3 years before you would be able to roll out the ECRV statewide.
Yeah, I don't know if
you're able to do it in large consortium groups together, it could go much faster, it sounds like.
I'm just saying that we're open to making them large groups to the degree that we all feel confident about that. So I think, you know, the last sentence there in that second-to-last bullet says, implementation of multi-county groups would move ahead rapidly as confidence is achieved. So confidence means the confidence of revenue, the confidence of the counties involved, the confidence of the consortia.
Mike, I'd be cautiously optimistic that we have a quicker schedule than maybe we had were believing earlier this year. I would just throw out the cautionary note. If Jim Biggs was here, that Jim is the counterpart to Jason for the IT support. He would probably say that where the first step here is to get a rollout with Dakota County, get a couple of get some feel as to how the submitters are submitting, any issues that pop up, and I think after we have Dakota and then hopefully after Hennepin, our confidence level of how quickly we can now populate or work with the other counties, we're probably in a better position at that point to say. But right now, given maybe at some point, since Teresa's here from Dakota, and if anybody from Hennepin County wants to speak too, to give their feel as to their confidence, how the form is working and the issues, I'm getting a sense from talking with Jason, talking with Jim, hearing from Dakota, that I think the people are cautiously optimistic that we will be able to move fairly quickly once we get through this first rollout phase. And Teresa, do you want to add anything to that? I mean, you've been sort of hands-on testing for everything here. And
well, I'm confident the next 2 months we'll be able to uncover anything else that needs to be addressed from the county side. And the submitter side has been through so much testing, and we're going to be inviting the title companies that we're working with back to do some final testing, final feedback, and then work with them on that go-live date. So, you know, that communication is going to be happening here in the next probably 2 weeks for that invitation for further testing and, planning that go-live together because they, you know, they're going to be the two title companies that we're going to work with to begin with.
All right.
And they'll be the initial go-live group, the pilots that you've been working with, too, when you start, say, November 2nd?
Yes, and those are the two companies that we've had partnered with
right.
Earlier this year. They were exposed to the application. Was given access to the application. They did some testing, heard a little bit of feedback on it, and really from that point forward, we haven't heard a lot. But now it's time because the application has stabilized so much. There's been very little change. It's time to again go back to that the two title companies we're working with. For a final look-see, they're not going to see much that has changed, so I think it's going to be stable in their perspective.
Well, one of the things that we just were thinking is that they probably didn't enter a lot of CRVs when they were reviewing the app, so we want to sort of request, why don't you enter 30 so you can really comb out anything that you just weren't thinking about before. So when I mean 30, I meant like maybe per person, so that we get a larger volume from their point of view.
And the other thing is, and it triggered when Teresa said from the county's perspective, I think from the department's perspective too, as the extent to which we can feel comfortable rolling it out in greater numbers is also going to depend, I think Jason alluded to some of it, is the comfort level within the IT folks within the department, but coming up with those other supporting policies such as the public accessibility to this kind of data and how much will be available when. We are currently in the process of trying to sketch out parameters and policy guidelines for when the public comes and asks for this data. As you well know, once you become make this all electronic and potentially centrally located at the department, we would be potentially flagging a lot more requests centrally at the department. So we're going to have to be able to augment what we're doing with the initial rollout at the county level with the back end accessibility and support systems too.
Right. And you know, there are public requests for CRV currently at the revenue, but usually it's for year-end data. So the current request cycle, that's the volume request cycle, is happening at the county level. So we're going to have to come up with a reasonable plan. We just don't want to get swamped to the point where we can't handle that. So we're going to work with the counties to... We got a report from Dakota County. I've got a request to get the same thing from Hennepin, which is, what is your current policy for providing access to the CRV? And hopefully we can come up with a reasonable plan. It also has to deal with the fact that not all CRVs are going to be in the revenue system. So whatever, you know, it has to make sense that the current process has a public access. So if people are coming to us and saying, well, we want all the Dakota CRVs, and we're saying, well, we only have, you know, we've got 60% of them, but we don't have 100%. So we need to walk through that and make sure that we're working in concert with the counties. And so there's that policy piece.
And work in concert with the other counties as they come on board. Because, we're going to go through a transition phase here that over the next year, maybe year and a half, we're going to get more and more counties, but not everybody's going to be on board, and not 100% of all the CRVs in those counties will be submitted electronically.
Right.
So there's going to be a transition policy that we have to work with the counties on in terms of this public accessibility.
And then the other thing I want to reemphasize is just the support issue. We do not have a support team in-house at Revenue for this kind of application. There is a support team for submitters of tax data, but those are very, smaller groups of, like the Intuits of the world and so forth, the FirstGov. So the support need is different. And here we've got original submitters that can be anybody, and they are going to call somebody and ask for support somewhere. So we just don't want to get caught where CRV is getting, a small black eye because we can't handle the ramp up of support right away. I think that, so we have to overplan, hopefully. And then the need for support will stable out and we should be okay. But I just don't want to get caught, when we talk about the ramp up speed, I don't want to get caught where, we've tried to add 15 counties and the kind of support calls we get, we just aren't being able to handle.
Okay. Well, let me throw out from the commission's perspective and the topic that I left with you, Gordon. It's taken us a long time to get some standards approved. Back when we were a task force, we kind of commemorated last month the approval of about 10 years worth of work to approve at least standards to be able to do a six-pack. Now, the six-pack was the famous residential home closing, and one of the six-pack's documents was the certificate of real estate value. Well, we're at the point where now there is the ability to record that package, and the one item that's remaining is how do we deal with the CRV? I think we all wish that we had the electric CRV that could be attached to whatever package gets submitted today. Have you given any thought to what we might consider doing for those counties that are going to be doing electronic recording in the next period of time until eCRVs are available in their county?
Sure. And you know, we got your phone message, and so we hadn't really thought about that particular question ahead of this meeting more than a few conversations, but I'm gonna stake out a vision of I think might be okay, and then we're gonna have to go back and readdress my vision with, you know, the lawyers and so to make sure that it's okay.
And there are some others here at the table and in the audience that I know would like to help shape that vision for you as well, and I'll offer some ideas as we go forward.
And, you know, I'm more of a project management technical guy. However, I believe that you know, the CRV itself is not required to be recorded.
Right.
So I think from revenue's point of view, the simplest answer is, well, we still need to track and do the paper process the way it is currently. You got a paper. Whether the county is actually doing eCRV or not, they still are going to have a paper CRV, and you still may want all the other six packs to be electronically recorded. So if they've got a paper CRV, I think that you let the paper CRV go through the entire process that it's currently doing, but at some point that's appropriate, could you scan it and include it in your, you know, packet to record? Well, at that point, I don't think revenue cares. I think it's perfectly okay to get it recorded that way or to include it in the document in that manner.
Would it be acceptable for myself or Jeff here as a submitter to take the paper CRV and scan it in and submit it with an electronic package of a deed, a mortgage, an assignment, a satisfaction, the CRV, and do the well disclosure certificate with the Department of Health?
Well, I think that, you know, I'm not sure I heard everything that you're saying. So did someone write onto the paper copy? Did they create a paper copy initially that's what you're scanning?
At the closing.
Yeah. At the closing, yes.
Okay, so that paper copy has the pink version underneath it. So I think in the scenario that we're talking about, you know, that so now what you're saying is I think you still got to give that to the county. Now, you could scan it in and include it in the recording packet, and you scan it in without the bottom of the pink copy. You know, scan it without the Social Security numbers in there. But the paper copy still needs to go to the county, and the county still needs to then accept that paper copy. It's the document that we have. It's the record that we have. And the county would have to then rip off the pink copy and send the pink copy to us, just like they do today. And they would still have to then wind up giving us the original paper copy, because that's the document from revenue's point of view. We aren't set up to receive a scan of the document. We're not set up to do that. So then after that's the process, the county would still create the flat file that they have of the data that's on the paper copy and send us that. So again, it's saying that the paper process from revenue's point of view would continue the way it is, but could the scan live in the six-pack recording package? Absolutely. Because revenue doesn't really, you know, that's really a function of the recorder's job at the county level to decide whether that's, you know, there or not.
So revenue would not be willing to accept a scanned image of the paper document with the Social Security number page?
Right. I think that would require a lot more work on our part, especially since it's got the Social Security number on it. And we're not set up to receive a scan. Now,
How about if we printed it? We got it scanned, or Jeff scans it, sends it to us. We print it out because we don't really want to deal with having to marry paper and scan together. We want it all electronic from the submitter side, and then once we get it, we could print it out and then give you your paper copy, but we don't really want to have to have Jeff send us the paper in addition to scan.
So how do you get the auditor ID number put onto it?
Well, when we print it out, we could do that internally. Then we would handle it just like normal. It's just that the delivery from Jeff to us is all electronic. We don't have
Here's you know, the quick response to that is that if there was no Social Security number on this thing, that's probably a doable scenario. But with the Social Security number page on it, I'm not really able to answer your question very well. So what we can do is I can set up a meeting, you know, or two back in revenue to discuss what is possible on how to handle that Social Security number aspect of it. But the problem is that right now we try to get that Social Security number separated out,
yep,
so that it's separated out from then on. So now if you're doing a scan and it's including the Social Security number, now it's sort of bundled all in there and it's all part of the process for a long time.
But it is that way today, really. I mean, because when we ship it in, we're shipping it with the Social Security number on it. When we, all at one time, whether that be a walk-in, by mail, by air.
Yeah,
mail,
but then at the county level, it is stripped off immediately. And then from then on, the entire process does not have any private data on it. So that's why it's that pink copy with the Social Security numbers off the bottom part.
Because the reality of trying to separate, I've dealt with this before in New Jersey where they had electronic, but you still had to ship in some paper and some was, and it just
defeats
didn't work.
The purpose.
It didn't really,
sure.
Because there's too much separation, too much chance of loss, and that type of thing. One question I have for you as far as the submitter side goes, I don't want to get off of this, but it relates to this, but is it possible to take the submitter's program as it is today and print a copy off the submitter program? You know what I mean? Once you create it, you can print a copy, right, of the electronic CRB. I mean, if it's the last, even if you put the data in there, I don't know if the counties would be willing to do this. I mean, could they actually get in and look at the Social Security number if that's the one piece we don't want to put on there?
I'm not exactly sure I'm following you.
Well, what I'm trying to accomplish is two things. One is getting people on the electronic CRB mechanism right away,
mm-hmm,
and then they print out a copy. I mean, the data's in there, right? But then they print out a copy, and then we can scan that copy. It's a little cleaner and a little better system, but then there's the data would be in there as far as Social Security number goes, and that would be the only real private piece. I mean, does the county really have to have the Social Security number as long as we're telling?
No, the county, in fact, does not need to have Social Security number. So
it
and that's
be,
what ECRV is actually doing is separating the Social Security number right up front.
Right. So that's what I'm saying is if you did that right up front, and as long as when we send that electronic version, they'll know what number is associated with that copy,
right?
And then when the Department of Revenue gets it, they know that number is this and that.
Right. So let me paraphrase, I think, what I'm hearing you say, because it's an interesting idea, and that is to say we could make the submit side of the form available to a broader community than county by county, where we are not making the edit side of the process available to that county. So they could...
Right.
They could go in, they could create the submit document, they could submit it to revenue. Revenue splits off the Social Security number. Then in the short term, the process is that the submitter would then print out a copy of what they got at revenue.
Mm-hmm.
It's now can be included in the electronic recording package. And then the county would receive that. They would still have to enter into their systems and create the flat file the way they currently do,
mm-hmm,
and review that. Technically there's no reason why you couldn't do that. But we would have to walk through setting a process on our side, not just with us, but with the counties to determine whether that's feasible.
Because I think it gives us a couple things. One is you get a lot of submitters on and using and they're essentially they're ready when the county's ready, right?
Yeah.
And the second thing, it's much cleaner. I'd much rather scan something that's printed than something, because there's so many handwritten things on the ECRB today, and that may be difficult for the counties to re-enter into the system.
What I guess I would request is that the ERERC provide a document to revenue that describes, how many counties are you talking about, how many submissions are you talking about, and what the ramp-up time for that is? What is that scale over time over the, say, the next 12
months? Are you talking about the
12
pack?
Months?
No.
Yes. Okay. Yes, because, you know, again, we talked about the need to provide adequate support. And so, you know, it's not something that we have planned for to date to suddenly say, oh, if you want to use an online form, just throw it open to the state to do that, because, you know, or how would you restrict it? Because you know, that's the issue. And then how do you make sure that counties are saying, yes, I know that I can accept the ERCRV form in this case, but not in this case, and making sure everyone's on board. I think that's going to take some thinking to make sure that all pull together.
Well, I know Larry's had some ideas about support as well. I don't want to speak for
sure.
You guys.
I think I mentioned that the last time you were here, that you could kind of train help. We could take some of the calls because they're submitting to the county this CRV information. That's where they've always been going with it. And we do the initial review now, so if they've got questions about what to put in the new form, we'd be happy to help with the calls.
And I think to the degree that it's possible, we certainly want to leverage county assistance as much as we can. There is an aspect of what is the confusion factor? Who when do they know who to call at what point?
Right.
How's that going to work and be effective?
Yep. Sometimes you have to come up with who is the point person to call, and then they have to decide, well, I can't answer that question here, but I know who can, and then transfer or take down the question and get back to the people. I mean, that's, you can have a first point of contact on questions too for each county if you want to do it that way.
Right. So I think if we got a suggestion from the committee on what kind of process you're seeing that go through and what the volume is and where that volume is, there would have to be some meetings established with counties to walk through all the issues that would accrue to that. And if it was seen that that process helps get you there faster than waiting for more counties to be on CRV, it's not something that we would hold up. Certainly we would participate in seeing if it would work. Do you have a comment about that?
One of the big things to keep important is in mind is that this is a new process for everybody, right? CRVs and the electronic recording of deeds, which we have never done yet in Minnesota. So I don't anticipate that the moment that we tell people they can, that all of the deeds are going to come in electronic. And if we're only using the electronic CRV process for those deeds that are filed electronically initially in the other counties that we're talking about here, it shouldn't be that big of an impact on the system just because of the small volume of deeds that we probably get initially in filing electronically. So
right.
You could limit it to only to accommodate for electronic recording that we're accepting this workaround that Jeff suggested.
Well, that sounds fantastic, Larry, and I just know we live in Minnesota and there's something called the snowball effect, so we'll have to see how it goes.
Well, and we can help as well as the Minnesota Land Title Association. I don't want to step out of bounds here, but I'm sure we can put educational classes together all the time, and we're looking for different ways to improve the association, so that's something we can do. I mean, we'd look for a little help from Department of Revenue as well. Maybe to help us with the first one,
sure.
Then we could do multiple ones. And then we also have the prep groups that a lot of the title companies attend those meetings throughout the state as well. So we have the ability to get some education out to the various places as long as we can kind of get that
right
first one.
Right. And I do see clearly that having the form available from revenue solves the Social Security problem immediately, right off the bat.
Yep.
Well, to bring closure to that, I mean, you're going to have to touch base with the IT folks, and also, I mean, the counties have to have some input.
Well, that's what I said.
The next step is maybe identify one or two of these options, and then get a group of people together to start seeing what's feasible here.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think that sounds very encouraging. And I think we as a commission would be committed to work with you on that. And there are people here at the table and in this room that I know would be more than willing to step up and volunteer. So, are there other thoughts, ideas in the room? Anybody else wants to ask a question here of Jason and Gordy on this topic? Any other commission members?
Can I ask other questions?
Sure.
Who's he going to ask a question?
I guess the other question I have is visiting the submitters. One of the issues they had was their production systems rely on the Internet Explorer 6.0. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that's changed there? Because essentially what's happening in the places that I've talked to and visited is they're so reliant on that they set up a spot off to the side that's got to be off their system. You know, it's
sure.
separate support, as the IT folks love to support something different.
Sure.
And so that is one of the issues. I think that's an issue with Hennepin as well coming forward. Is there any movement or any?
Well, I can just say that, you know, adding 6.0 support nearly doubles the maintenance cost of the application. You know, getting things to look pretty across the, you know, 6.0 is notoriously bad for standard support in browser pieces. We've got a piece of software that we're using that is generating HTML itself. So there's code that we're using that we did not write that creates the final file that's then rendered by the browser. So there's some limitation on our ability. You know, we have to work within the constraints of that piece of software also. That's not to say they don't support 6.0, but it just means that there is differences in how they're done. So ultimately, you might wind up having to actually just duplicate all the files, make different changes in the code in order to support the other browser type. So there's a resource issue on doing that. It's not technically, you can technically do it. It's just, you know, when do you have the resources to do it and what's the cost of doing it? So what we have stated as our process here is that we are supporting 7.0 and Firefox from the start. Most other compliant browsers such as Safari will all work, although we're not going to explicitly state that we support them. And if there is sufficient demand and complaint, then we would consider adding 6.0 support. But the full cost of doing that is not really scoped out. We don't know what the true cost is of adding that support. There is a, you know, rapid movement in the industry and around to move people off of 6.0. Microsoft is trying to get people to move off of 6.0 now, as opposed to the way they've been maybe as recent as 9 months ago. So not only is 7 out, but they're now pushing 8. So there is good reasons why people are going to be moving to 6.0, and I think it might happen, you know, fairly rapidly. So there's a trade-off between how long do you wait or do you spend the cost to support it. And that trade-off is something that we're not going to go to 6.0 for production on Dakota. If we had to do 6.0 support up front, it would delay release. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. So we've already been telling Hennepin County that we don't intend to support 6.0 for Hennepin County. Hennepin County has a similar situation. They have applications within their internal environment that are written for 6.0. They're caught in the same thing in reverse. They don't want to have to rewrite those apps to move them, even though they know they're going to have to. So it's a matter of timing again from Hennepin's perspective on when they go through that process and paying. So that's where we sit. Essentially, it's a would be nice to have, would be nice to support, but until we don't have another choice, we're waiting.
Can I just tell you, since this issue was kind of brought to our attention, in Hennepin, we've kind of raised the issue rather substantially all over, and we're in the process right now of doing a test on all the systems in the assessor's office and in our office to see if any of them have a problem in being compliant with 7.0. And we've taken a machine and upgraded it to 7.0, and we're testing everything on it. And if we find no problem, we probably will move forward to 7.0, even though the rest of the county may not. Okay. We are not aware, at least to my knowledge, of any system that we're using that would require 6.0. And that is the same of what I know of our assessor's office. The other thing that I've noticed in the last couple months this summer is Microsoft is getting very cute now to tell you you need to move to a different browser here and letting you know you need to upgrade and this sort of thing. And they're sending messages out now to people about that and how they deal with that. So, yeah, I think what you're saying, Jason, is becoming more abundantly clear. And how long is Microsoft going to even support 6.0? I don't know.
Right.
But we're going to find a way to be able, in Hennepin, to use 7.0 for this application. Okay. And that's something that we've kind of hit up IT with. So, you know, maybe there was some good that came out of the shock that went around here when we understood what they were telling us here some months ago.
And the second the little statement I got back from Tom, voice was on phone, was that that their initial fear that it was going to be pretty bad was not as didn't play out as much. That maybe their move to 7.0 won't be as difficult as they were fearing.
Right. So
I think that's all the questions I have. Well, other than I guess, you know, as we put this together, who's our point of contact?
At Revenue, that can be me, and okay. And in my absence, Holly is now a contact point for ECRB as well. So
okay. And then as far as the submitters as well, too, is Holly or?
Well, we're trying to work through the counties on the submitter side. So right now, the submitters we're testing are at Dakota County, and we've requested Hennepin to identify some specific submitters that they are going to work with. And that's how we're doing it. Instead of us identifying submitters that we're comfortable with, we're getting the counties to, you know, say, which submitters do you want to do some testing through?
But I'm saying, is the support path then back to the county and back to you guys, or submitters?
During the pre-implementation phase, the pre-production phase, yes.
Okay.
So what's the yes to? What's
that the submitters are working through the county.
Okay.
Now, that's not to say that we don't answer the phone. We'll answer the phone. If Teresa is, you know, on vacation or something, we've got a test going, then we'll connect up with the submitters. But what we're doing is we're getting the submitters to funnel their suggestions and comments and feedback through the county. It does two things. I mean, it makes the chain of communication very consistent. It also allows Teresa to know what they are talking about and seeing, and then she can tie them together with what the county is seeing and present a more coherent picture to us. So I think there's benefit in going through that process. Now, in regards to this other discussion, that pattern's wouldn't play out exactly the same way, but we're a little ways away from deciding how that would work out. So if we were going to reveal the submit side of the form separately from the rest of the ECRB process, mm-hmm. we would be working out some other process. Okay. I think it still might be saying, well, you know what, there's early adopter six pack counties, and maybe we'd do the same process with those counties.
But as far as you're concerned, once you've kind of from the state's point of view, other than the city issue, you're
yes.
basically saying once that is done, in your mind you feel like, okay, we've done the programming to accommodate city components, county components, and that each additional rollout really wouldn't take more programming.
Not from revenue size. Where the holdup, even Dakota has said that we're actually not going to support the download and upload of the XML. Even though we've got a web service available for them to use, that they're in the middle of a transition for a system right now, And so it requires programming on their side to update their system to accommodate the upload and download of batch XML files. Mm-hmm. So I think our experience is going to be that the delay will be at the county side, where the counties are saying, you know, we're not quite ready to do the upload and download. For smaller counties where they are not going to download the data to their local system, it's not a problem. And so then in that scenario, yes, the programming is done. They can edit the file online. They can go through the entire process. They can mark it final. They can communicate that back to revenue, and that all happens within the ECRV application, and all that workflow is supported. But if they need during their workflow the download of the XML into their local system to coordinate their SAMA or CAMA systems or whatever it is, then they need to write those applications. Now, that's where the early adopter counties representing all the consortia is. Once a consortia has modified that process, you know, for one or two of their counties and they have the confidence, then it will go faster. But we have to you know, acknowledge that we experienced more problems than we thought we would on the Homestead XML file. So the Homestead XML file was all we did from revenue is say, here is the schema of the XML, and the counties have to submit that XML up to our systems. And frankly, it's taken the consortia's time to feel comfortable with the XML process. More time than we thought that they would.
But if they don't use the web services at this point, their other option is just manual entry into their system then. If that's
correct.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Which is, I assume, what Dakota is going to do for the time being until you get your new tax and CAMA system. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah. Then the only thing, then it becomes a process issue, is the process working correctly so that they aren't making changes in their local system that aren't being reflected in what revenue is using for equalization, right? So there's a human process that needs to make sure that the county needs to make sure that they're doing correctly if they're doing a separate data entry.
Okay. Anything else, Jeff?
Bill, is there anything more to add from the Huntington's?
Well, I guess that's our concern, is the workflow issue with the cities and the volume. And we certainly have trust in what's going on in Dakota Valley as far as the form of design and use of data entry. So we want to facilitate to keep everybody's interest in that, to facilitate that workflow and rest of the as long as that's a temporary solution. We can keep the measure of the passion for it's not.
And I want to echo that.
Most
I think.
Important passion.
I think Dakota's been doing a fantastic job of really looking at the application and giving us the right kind of feedback, and I have confidence that that will show itself as we roll this out to new counties. That, you know, people are always going to come up with new ideas and new suggestions, but I'm pretty confident that after we get through a cycle of both Hennepin and Dakota, that we're going to be in a position to say, well, yes, we thought about that, and this is where we are. And some of those suggestions may be a feature suggestions. Other times it's just that, well, this is how we accomplished this, and I really think that we're going to be able to move forward without sort of saying, oh, we need to stop and redo something because the workflow isn't what we thought it was.
Bill, you had a question?
Yeah. Jason, two parts, perhaps. You mentioned thrust here and then possibly spoken with Anoka next. Any sense for when you might look at some of the other early adopters? I know that Sherburn has been mentioned,
yep.
Michelle is here. Have you got a sense for when that might happen?
Well, I sent out an email yesterday, I believe it was, and so I'm getting sort of a re-poll of all the other early adopter counties to find out. And so far, I've gotten response back for three who all say, yes, we want to go. We want it. So I just didn't want to get caught where I said, you know, we want to hold off and wait or whatever. I wanted to see what they were saying. So far, everyone's saying we want to go. So once we have that, then I'm essentially going to call them over the next few weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, and sort out who we think should be the third county with their assistance.
So all those counties are possible being the third county. And, you know, really, once we get to the third county, then it's going to be sort of a staggered parallel process. So we'll probably be working with two or three counties at a time at different staggers in where they are in the process.
And your sense for when you're going to be ready for that, whoever that is.
Yeah. Well, I would hope that we're setting up a meeting with Dakota or with Hennepin to establish the milestones. So let's say that we might be doing that meeting with the third county in November. Maybe late October. I'm guessing November though, because we're going to be really pressed to make sure that we're handling the first one right. So I'm guessing that we'll probably do that in November. And if we can at all try to front load 2010 with as many of those early adopter counties, I think we'd like to try to do that.
By front load, do you mean?
First half.
Getting
the remaining of those five early adopter counties in the first half. I'd like to see that happen. Gordon mentioned Jim Biggs, the technical manager of the project's not here. You know, he probably might give you a little bit more cautious response than I am. But we'd certainly like to see that, absolutely.
But I mean, if you would look at doing it regionally, would it happen quicker for you?
I don't think so, because we're going to be working a lot with the consortia that's handling the particular county. So in Sherburne's case, it's the MCIS consortia, and they are going to have to, you know, be modifying their process and working with the county. And I think we need to walk through that with one county. Once that one consortia has that confidence level, then we can talk about pulling in a group of counties from that consortia. So if we did it regionally, then it would just mean that, you know, like myself, I'm only one person in the office. We've got Jim Biggs who's managing five developers. If we've got three or four consortia all trying to operate at the same, you know, part of the process, and they're all trying to, you know, and I'm trying to coordinate that, it's not going to go as well.
So that third place is a pretty important step.
The third place.
Third county.
Third county coming in is pretty important, because then whoever's in that tax package is the one that's going to...
Well, it's not... let me try to be clear here. We're setting up, you know, staggered process. So we've got, you know, the third county is at point A, and they're moved to point B, and then the second county, we start at point A. And, you know, and we start moving them through in sort of a pipeline scenario. We're not going to do Sherburne County, get them done, and then pull in 10 or 20 counties from the MCIS consortia before we start working on a different consortia's county.
Okay.
We're not going to do that.
I guess that was my question, because...
Right. It's not going to be that. It's more that we want to get as many of the consortia cycled through.
Put Sherburne County in a closet someplace. That was going to happen.
Just try it.
Which county are you?
Lyon County.
Lyon County, right. So, and I believe...
I fall under the outstate.
Right.
Yeah.
And your consortia is, or your computer provider is...
Huh?
Who's your tax
system? Oh,
Yes.
Yeah. Computer systems.
Computer
professionals. Yeah.
He's good.
Yeah. So, and I have had conversations with Chad already. So it's not like I haven't been talking to them either. You know, they have been able to look at the schema, which, you know, has had some changes over the last 12 months, but by and large, the schema has not really changed. So in fundamental ways, it really has not changed. So Chad has been able to look at that schema for a long, long time. Any changes that we've made subsequently would be tweaks if they've done any programming. My guess is they haven't done any programming to date. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the consortias can start planning ahead. And so any county that would like to push the consortia or their computer provider, software provider, to plan ahead and start thinking about CRV, please, by all means, you know, give them a call and tell them to request, you know, an updated version of the schema from myself. And we're posting a new version on the website in a week or so. And they can start looking at it. Because the design of the system... And we also have some documentation on what the web service is already written that we've had reviewed through Dakota County. And we've tried to make the system very simplistic. It's basically a download and upload process. And so if they have the schema and they know how the upload and download process works, they can go ahead and start working on their internal pieces without waiting for us to set up the other process setup for using ECRV. And that's true for all the providers.
Any other questions from any of the audience? Well, if not, two things. Number one, we will be back in touch with you about a committee that to work with you to explore what we've talked about here. You can certainly go back and, you know, begin to kick around in your shop, because I think we're very interested in pursuing that that item. And secondly, I just want to thank you both and the department for taking the time to come over and share an update with us. And again, anything we can do to help, assist, promote, push, prod, lobby, whatever you need to have, we're more than willing to help you with in that sense. So again, thank you very much, and keep up the good work. And if you want to go back and keep working on it, you're more than welcome to. We won't hold you any longer. So thank you much. But if you'd like to stay, you're certainly more than welcome to stay.
There's
also
a few people I need to have conversations with. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike. I want to also reinforce what Jason said. Dakota County and Teresa in particular, if it wasn't for their assistance, we wouldn't be nearly as far as we are. So right now, I'm anticipating good things from Hennepin County, too. So these first two or three counties that we're working with, it's really important.
Yep. Thanks, Dakota County, for job well done. And Teresa, good work.
And you got my number in case you want something at a high level to leverage. I don't know the details that these guys know, but you know my number, Mike.
We've got your number now, Gordon. Okay. Thank you. Back to our agenda here, where we left off. Or do we want to just take some time on identifying some people that would be willing to?
Sorry.
A committee with them. Jeff, I'm assuming you'd be willing to participate in that from the commission. And I'm assuming there are. There are some vendors. I don't even have to. I'm not even looking because I'm sure that there's somebody behind me whose hands up. Larry's interested. I must tell you, Bill and Larry, or Dallin, it's the most quiet I've heard the two of you on this topic for some time. So I don't know if you like what you heard, or but I did find some very encouraging things from Revenue here today that there may be some willingness to explore some things that in my discussions with Gordon had not been a willingness to explore.
That accounts greatly for our plan.
Pardon me?
That accounts greatly for our plan.
Right.
Their willingness to look at a
workaround. Yeah. I mean, that was...
My sentiment as well is certainly heard a more encouraging and cooperative tone than we heard last August. When Simplifile approached Department of Revenue, and we're still willing in any form to assist with either sharing some practices or shortcuts that have worked in other states, as well as helping them design a solution. Very encouraged, and would be happy to help in any way.
Okay, very good.
Mike?
Mark?
I have to
get back to our county about when we're going to do e-recording. And while I heard some movement today, I heard still a long process. Based on the pilots and based on the early adopters and those types of things. So has there been any definitive timelines or goals set to what was stated today?
You heard everything that we know in terms of where they're at. They have not given us a timeline for the rollout of anything beyond November 2nd.
Well, and the original three-year
rollout. The original rollout that they told us when they were here last winter is that it would probably take 3 years to roll this out. And
when was the 3 years from when?
from whenever
the
they started.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
So that would mean we're probably talking about 2012, if you were to count from where we're at today. And that's kind of what has sent this commission. It's given most of us that's not an acceptable alternative. And so that's what's led to a whole number of things that have gone on here over the last few months. Now, I heard some change in attitude here that I have not heard before, and I think Bill and Dallin have probably had the most other discussions or attempts for discussions with them. We have met with them as a department. This has become a much higher priority. I think there have been focuses taking on this, and at least what I heard from the Anoka County Assessors Group, they've been very positive about using the product now, and they're much more upbeat than what we heard 6 months ago, quite frankly.
Dakota.
Yeah. Which, you know, I think bodes for, you know, a change in terms of where things are at. And if they're willing to talk about, again, an alternative workaround, and if they're willing to make this form available to those to fill out that would be electronically recording, oh, I think we can find a way to work with that on an interim basis. And then that would make it available, I see, to those counties that are choosing to do electronic recording with Model 2. And I think that's what we're trying to get to. So in that sense, I what I heard today is the best thing I've heard on this topic. Certainly in the last 3 or 4 years.
But it didn't sound like it was an option to scan the current version because of the Social Security. And really, that is, to me, that would be a big concern because it does kind of marry itself, and it could go places it wasn't intended, right? If you ship that electronically, it could wind up in the county records unintentionally. Likely from a submitter side attaching it to the wrong thing or whatever.
But that's the same concern in a paper copy. If you send the paper documents to my office and I decide to scan it into my records because my not smart enough to know it's not part of the deed, then it can still get put into the records.
That's true.
We know what we're supposed to divide off. I don't understand where scanning that in should be a problem. We should be able to be trained or train our staff well enough to go, this is a deed, this is a mortgage. We know how to separate them when they come in all scanned together. I mean,
from a simple file perspective, we have a process already in place to ensure that what's called a helper document does not get uploaded and becomes public record. So to us, obviously there's some education that needs to take place, but it's a moot point for those that are submitting with us.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like Janine said, it would be clearly just kind of the human error where I'm scanning the CRV and then I'm calling in a deed and all of a sudden it gets, then like Janine would have to then follow up with another error and say, oh, this is a deed and put it over. I understand. I understand these guys would be squeamish about that type of solution.
But it can happen in the paperwork.
Yeah, it can.
And I just one more quick point on that. When you have the partnership between the submitter and the county, well said, Janine, and other conversation that happened earlier, it's walked in. And so in essence, putting it into an electronic format is even more secure than putting it in the mail or a courier. Because it's locked down, it's security password, it's security website, so it gets to even more secure before they take action on it anyway.
Right. The issue that
makes Jeff's suggested approach different is you heard that if there was an approach to use a scanned document, they're still going to insist on a paper document to be submitted. Jeff's idea in terms of moving forward, at least for those documents, gets away from the need for a paper document. And that is a real, real breakthrough if they're willing to explore that. And that's why that, to me, is extremely exciting. Because if we can do the other option, which is another workaround we've talked about, is scan the CRV and attach it to the package. If they're still going to require counties to do the paper document, it's now added to our work. It may still be better for us in the long run to do it that way than doing it the way we're doing. But they've added another step that we were trying to get away from, and that's why I like what you've come up with as a thing to explore further. So,
and I think we can train the submitters. I mean, we can set up MLTA classes,
yep,
classes at the county and that type of thing. I think.
Yep.
And from what I saw, and you know, you've seen this as well, it's not, it's easier than filling out a paper one. I mean, it's, yeah, if you compare the two, it's more intuitive than the paper one. I know there's some issues,
yeah,
we've got to work through, but and it was nice to understand how, where the help was going to come from, too, because I don't know from your group, are they getting, have they been, I think, honestly, everyone's kind of waiting. These guys are waiting for somebody to say something, and then
right,
this group is saying, when's somebody going to come and ask us, how is it going?
Your idea, Jeff, is not only easier, it's far less expensive for the people because they don't have that expensive carbonless set of forms.
Right.
It also, I think, would really bring people to the electronic filling out process because now it's simple for them. Rather,
yep,
than go to a typewriter, which is unforgiving, I can go to a screen, which is far more forgiving, complete the form, get something that I can send in, and I'm not handling the paper. That, I think, would probably be about the biggest step that you could take towards really getting people to jump on board electronic recording.
Yeah.
Plus, you're getting the submitters trained right now,
yeah,
up front. And then at every county that comes on, they don't have to worry about training the submitters. They're already on board,
but
which,
yeah,
is the beauty of what this does.
And an interesting sidelight of that is if you do print the form, the Department of Revenue is not saving the information, they're fairly going to quickly going to realize that they're going to have an ocean of these things that all they need to do is begin saving.
Yeah.
They'll have to save them in Jeff's scenario.
Yeah.
Because that's where the Social Security,
yeah,
number lies.
That's, yeah.
It won't be printed out. We won't get that. So they have to save it,
right,
in the scenario that Jeff is proposing.
It's going to have to tie back to a number on them.
Yep.
And then the county actually never sees the Social Security number, which kind of,
right,
removes some of that liability and risk.
That would be great, too.
Which is great for us, because that's what we're trying to get to.
Mike, I have a question. So when they're writing the ECRV with the other counties, are they trying to then make sure that it auto-populates, like, Dakota County's assessor's records at the same time that the ECRV is being submitted? That's kind of what I heard a little bit.
Not exactly.
Okay.
They're talking about if you want in your county to download the electronic file to put in whatever database you use in your county,
okay,
for your assessment system, you can write code to do that.
To do that. But they're working with counties to do that.
Well, that's going to be the county's responsibility. They've written the schema. Now,
but
you have to take it and write it to whatever CAMA,
okay,
system you got.
Okay.
And
that's what they're
testing, though. Are you guys going to do that?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer in Hennepin if we're going to do that or not. I mean, we're in the same boat that Dakota is in moving to a new tax system. If I were the assessor, I would say yes, because I don't want to have to keep keying all that stuff into a database that they're now using when it can be downloaded through this file. I would rather key in all the paper ones that people submit into this electronic one and use that to download than to continue the old paper download file that you send over.
Then you got a built-in help desk for the submitters if that's the way they do it.
Yes.
I think I heard Jason say they have not only the schema, but they also have a web service available for,
yes,
that purpose.
Right. Right, which
now
will make it easier.
Yeah, that was
yeah,
news.
Because
I don't think that was available before.
And so
a lot of the news today.
And actually, with the web services, you don't have to build the integration today. You could web service into a database, and you know what I mean. You could test the web services much earlier than integration with your tax system. That's
like workflow the document around.
Mm-hmm.
I am still concerned with Mark's question about timelines and what other resources we have to control some of that timeline. Because if we're looking, you know, the next five counties in the first part of next year, that's still not very many counties. But for 6 months from now.
That's true, but if they do kind of take this solution, then, there's two issues, right? You could e-record without having the integration.
Right.
If that's the question about e-recording. If it's a question of integration for your assessor's office, they haven't said, gee, that's going to be less than 3 years now. I mean, I don't think anyone's willing to jump up and put a line in the sand at this point and say, nope, we'll have it done now in 2 weeks. Those guys would take his head off right there.
Could it be part of this subcommittee's charge or task to work into this proposal, some deliverables and goals and timelines? Because we already know that it takes the Department of Revenue a while to do what they're hopefully going to do. I mean, they made a step today, but you know, it's taking us from the dark ages to the ages with a little bit of light. It truly doesn't get us where we want to be in the e-recording world. It's an end around, it's a solution. But hopefully that there could be some sort of short-term goals and long-term goals, timelines built into the process.
Mark, we tried to push that a little bit in, when was it, January that they spoke to us? Or
it was in the wintertime. Yeah.
Or last fall. And, you know, it didn't even matter how much we pushed. We weren't getting any type of movement from them as far as, I mean, they were supposed to be done with the CODA last January, and here it is 8 months later. You know, so it doesn't really, what they say and where we got are two different places.
I don't think it'll hurt to push the button, so at all.
I mean,
they've come to the table with a whole different positive attitude and mentality. It certainly wouldn't hurt to build something in as an expectation from the ERERC subcommittee from this group. It wouldn't hurt to just throw it in there. Or to explore it.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm looking for is a rollout strategy. What's the rollout strategy of the process? I heard they're going to work with a couple of counties here, and then they're going to work with the early adopters, and then they're going to go from there. So if that's fine, I can live with that. But what's the full rollout strategy of this process, of this plan?
They gave us a rollout the last time we're here. I don't know how county specific it was, but it was
basically those counties that have paid into the kitty for the development are the first ones to be on the priority list to go forward.
And then
as those get rolled out, they will take others, and they'll have to ante up to pay.
As they ante up, yeah.
That they will add them to the list. Now, what I'm seeing is that's their strategy to do the ECRB. That's not acceptable to us in terms of being able to e-record. What we're dealing with now is, all right, they're going to move forward with their strategy for the ECRB. How are we going to now find a way to work with them in order to do e-record? And that's the alternative that I think we need to push and get a timeline for that, because I'd like to see that up and operational here yet this fall. Probably at the same time Dakota County goes live. It would be nice to be able to have that, because that would then say we could do e-recording of deeds in any county that is doing electronic recording. And any county then has submitters that could be inputting data into the ECRB. The county wouldn't be integrating to their back-end systems with it, but revenue would be getting the data, and you guys would now be able to submit something to us from that paper document.
Something we don't have to drag a typewriter out to do.
Yes. And Janine's poor Eileen's law students would finally be saying, oh, my goodness, we want to be in a county that does electronic recording. And then yes. There'll be a push, too, for us to have more counties to do electronic recording. I mean, this could all work very well as a strategy to push all of us in the direction that I think we want to go. And that's where I agree, Mark. I mean, that's the timeline, and I think that's what we want this committee to work with them on, to come back in terms of how soon could that. You can call it a workaround, but I'd call it a early step rollout from revenue for using their product. And it would then be a back-end integration for the county after that phase rollout for those that are doing electronic recording. But in order to have the early phase rollout, you've got to be doing electronic recording in your county. Otherwise, you don't get to use it.
It's true. Yeah. Or unless you pay.
And if you're a county, you got to pay.
How about you want? What's the number?
The goal I'd like to see is the November 2nd, and maybe some of the fact that we can train the submitter and might be a plus on them that they won't have to be worried about that. How many calls they're going to get on how to fill it out.
Seemed to be a big concern. I suppose...
It is a big concern to them. It has been all along, is we don't have any help desk.
It's only because it's a big unknown for them. That's
right. But, you know, everybody's been filling out that information forever.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's the same information.
Well, not only that, but anybody in a law firm would call the county where you're trying to record. You'd never call revenue because you just get put on hold. You'd call the county or you'd go to the courthouse and ask what to do. So I think that's just one of their kind of paper tigers that they keep putting up.
Yeah. So I don't see that as a drawback.
Have they communicated at all with Wisconsin Department of Revenue? You know, as of July 1, 2009, Department of Revenue of Wisconsin will no longer accept paper.
Mark, we have spoken with them about models from other states, including Wisconsin, Colorado, and a number of other states, and to no avail. They are on their path, and you know they have considered up till today anything that's different than that path to be a subtraction from them, you know, getting to where they want to go. So they are aware. They have seen models of other states.
I think we showed them the ACRA system 4 years ago. This group did.
Yep.
Well, and Wisconsin was a state that initially decided to go it alone, and then they opened it up. We participated with them in bringing a no-cost solution, part of which they adopted and then rolled out to submitters statewide.
Well, let's proceed with the agenda here, but let's deal with our subcommittee. We've got Larry DeLene, Bill Morey, Jeff Carlson, and
okay. Saw you.
Dallin.
She
Kay had her hand up. I saw, right?
Yep.
Good for reminding me. All right. Go ahead and. I'm going to ask Jeff to chair it, being that you're a commission member, and okay. Go ahead and follow up with Jason to schedule a meeting.
Okay.
How about tomorrow?
Okay with me.
You can have his number now, and you want to go out and call him right now.
Yeah. Probably still catch him in the parking lot, right?
Anyway. Well, thank you. I think very good discussion, good comments, good input. Thank you. Those of you that have been here and participated and commission members, I think this is maybe a step in the right direction here for all of us, that we'll get something that will work, I think, for everybody's best interest. So Why don't we go on to subcommittee reports? Trusted submitter?
Well, we just have to finish off the trusted submitter agreement. I think that's the last we've had some revisions, and I think we're almost there. Thanks to Janelle for looking at those. And I think I called you, Mike, on the
right.
only thing that I had question on, so I think we're pretty well there with the new with the new trusted submitter agreement.
I've printed one up, not for the whole group, but just for you guys, so if you can look it over and let me know then, too, if it's good to go, then. And
okay.
I think it has all the suggestions included in there, if I can find it. Go ahead.
Okay. That's it. And then, so we have that, and the only other thing is the MLTA had a conference this last week and let them know early, I guess, that the Model 2 standards would be out there and they'd be able to, you know, there's no need for the counties to have their systems validated with Model 2. They kind of self-police in that way, and that would open things up. So there was a lot of interest. You know, again, they got it all funneled back a little bit around to the ECRV. We can get some workarounds. And I did mention that we're going to meet with them today to try to work on some solutions. So that's about all I have.
Good. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And then we've got our recorder subcommittee group, and that's Chris and Larry. Anything new this month? You've been doing yeoman work here for the last...
I took a month off.
Well, and I've been swamped with torrent stuff, and so I haven't had too much to focus on this, so I don't have a county data report or e-recording. Sorry. I'll get that to you next time.
Okay. Well, I think your committee has done the yeoman work in getting us to the standards that we did celebrate here last month, so I think it's very appropriate that you have a month to the good. So, anyway, well, that kind of gets us through item 4, and then we're on to item number 6. Model 2 recording standards released to the public. I think you'll see in your packet a draft letter to go out announcing the standards. One thing I'm wondering, and I guess I'll throw this out to all of you, I thought it might be nice to put all the commission members' names on the side here in some form or another.
But not
for like
numbers.
Letterhead? We could put it on like the top, like letterhead.
That or yes, in that sense. And then if my number is going to go on there, we'll have to see. That's the information number in our office for those who are calling to get access to public land records. and maybe that's the one that should be there. I don't know, but maybe it.
I don't know. Just dealing with students, sometimes it's a lot easier to give them an email address, and then you can kind of manage the returns rather than a phone number.
Yeah, that probably would be even better.
So you're an email address?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think so.
More electronic.
Pardon me?
It's more electronic.
Right. Right, we're electronic, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Mike, I have a question. Did
yes.
Pam make those revisions that we asked last time? Did we get
yes.
an update?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, in the public material, and everybody should have...
We've got copies here.
Yeah, copies,
in our
right.
folder. Mm-hmm. I probably should have said something about that, but... And we haven't, I guess, thanked Pam again yet this month, but we'll do that. we've drawn on her quite a bit here to update and finalize some of those documents, but they should be in your packet. From a few changes that we made at the last meeting that Pam put forth for us to have here, so.
And I have one more question. We have the affidavit regarding foreclosure that just got approved for the Uniform Community License. As the UCB approves new forms, how do we want to handle that? We just want to classify them under affidavit, and then, you know, UCB just alerts Diane that they're there, or the commission they're there, and you know, as we go into the future here, things change. And
I'm kind of guessing we're going to be at some point somewhat of a maintenance mode, just like they are. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that would be brought up as the changes came about.
Okay, so there is a change here in the local maintenance.
Yep.
Do the recorders have a representative on that commission?
Yes, we do. Kathy Rychek from St. Louis County and Gail Miller from Renville.
Okay. See, because we never, as lawyers, we don't necessarily hear when there's a new one. You just go to the website and notice it. But if there would be a process about I could probably suggest categories for the new forms if there's any issue about that. Because this looks so much better.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I did mention to the MLTA that we did not address foreclosures in this first round, and that we would come back to that at some other date. That's on our rollout schedule.
Yes. But we were hoping by the time we get to it, we may not need to get to it as high a priority because we were not hoping we aren't going to have so many of them in the future. But it wasn't the six pack.
Well, and so they sell them electronically. They still have to be there, sign it, and usually it's held at the government center.
Yep.
And the need probably isn't as great either, right? Because don't they have to go to the sheriff first, personally?
They're signed by the sheriff, and then they're usually right by the government center, and they come right over and file them.
So it'd have to be an integration between the sheriff's office, electronic signing, and
because those aren't quite done yet either. Kathy's working on that. Since the UCB are working on that section, but they said they were hoping to have them out shortly, actually, so they should be coming quite soon.
But I don't think we'll see as many of those filed electronically as we do with paper for quite a while.
Right, because, I mean, essentially they'd have to take it out of the sheriff's office, take it back to the office, scan it in, then send it
over.
Yeah.
And most of the time they want it recorded right away.
Right.
Yeah.
Those notices of postponement aren't going to go through electronically. They're all going to be paper. Yeah. I mean, that's not one I would spend too much time worrying about. Well, anybody have any suggestions on the letter here at all?
Thought it read very well.
If not, we'll proceed forward with getting it out here in the next few days. That brings us to item number 7 on the agenda. We had some discussion here a few months ago about schema. And I had mentioned that Dean Pass had sent me an email, and he'd also sent a copy to Pam Trombo about the standards that we were approving and the possibility of considering adopting now a schema to match up with what we've approved here in terms of these standards that could gel with what PREA has done on the national level. I know he sent a couple of communiques with Pam. Janine, I know you asked that we have a little more discussion on this so we maybe understand it a little bit. So I did ask Dean if he would also join us a little bit and kind of give us an overview of what he was thinking about in layman's terms so that we kind of understand this and what the issue is and where he was coming from and what he was thinking. So, Dean, I'd call on you if you can kind of give us a little overview of what you had in mind and what we might want to consider here.
Okay.
Dean, for all of those of you that don't remember, got involved with the old task force quite a few years ago and had a company by the name of West Central Indexing. It has now kind of modified their name to now be XS Consulting. And they have indexing systems that they have in a number of counties around the state, including the county that I'm in, are using their services and products. So anyway, that's a little backdrop of who Dean is and what his business is.
Okay, so I got first a basic generic question that I need to ask, otherwise the rest of it doesn't matter. So the spreadsheet that I'm looking at that was handed out today is considered to be the standard by which Model 2 is going to be rolled out to the state. Is that a true statement, this Excel spreadsheet? That?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And so within this spreadsheet there is a depiction of the PREA 241 standard of its elements and attributes. And there's a column that says required by PREA, yes or no. And then there's another column, many more columns, one for each document type or grouping. And then there's data next to the attributes or elements. Am I to assume that if in the column for affidavit there is data in a certain attribute, call it recordable document type, PREA doesn't require it, but in the spreadsheet, affidavit is in that column, am I to assume that Minnesota will need affidavit to be in that attribute, or it's not deemed an acceptable Model 2 submission? That is a basic question with a huge ramification on the answer.
Hey, Dean, it's Pam.
Hello, Pam.
I was just, I had to leave the office for a second. Can you give a quick summary of what you just said?
Yep. So in the document that the Excel spreadsheet that was handed out that is now, in quotes, the Minnesota Standard for Model 2 Recording, we have the PREA representation, attributes, elements. We have a column that says required by PREA, yes or no. And then the columns that represent the document groupings for Minnesota's UCBs. And I just took an example, the biggest one, the one that I've been communicating to you with. Recordable document type is not required by PREA. It's not required to be even present in the PREA standard. It's optional. And right next to the no in the column for affidavit, there is, in quotes, the word affidavit. So my question was, am I to assume that a document submitted in Minnesota, if it's going to be valid, must have one of, affidavit being one of the appropriate pieces of data in that attribute? If it doesn't have data, or that element doesn't exist, is it deemed not in compliance with Minnesota's Model 2 standard?
Well, that is that's identifying the type of the document. So yes, it is required. It has to have that value in there.
Okay, so in that regard, go all the way over, well, look at any one of those fields or elements of data that you have in those fields and match it up to PREA, and you've just approved an invalid schema. You've just approved an invalid Model 2 standard, because that's an enumerated field in PREA, and release is not one of the enumerated it's not acceptable in PREA's enumerated list.
What I'd understood we were doing, because PREA doesn't require most anything, that when we were putting these together, we were creating for Minnesota the fields that would be required.
True. And if you say that recordable document type is required, that's an enumerated field in the PREA 2.41 standard, meaning you get a list, you get a choice.
1, 2, 3, 4.
You get a list of document recordable document types that you can choose from, and some of the ones that you've put in here are not in that list. So what you're telling somebody is, go ahead and submit to Minnesota using the PREA 2.4.1 DTD or schema, and if you want to record a release, a satisfaction, put release in the recordable document type that's invalid with regard to PREA. You can't do that and still consider yourself PREA using the PREA standard, because it's an enumerated field and you've just added something that wasn't already there. So that's beyond my question. My question was, am I to assume that it's required? I'm just pointing out a flaw, so I wouldn't send your letter out until you've got it fixed. But, okay, so now...
That's on our part.
So now I'm... So if I'm to assume then that you're putting data in the ones that you want there to be data in, let's take... I'm going to give you an example now. Somebody... let's take the easiest one here, and that's unique identifier, and that for Minnesota is either a 0 or a 1, and that is supposed to signify either abstract or Torrens. True? Okay, so look at the first one, affidavit. 0 is abstract, 1 is Torrens under unique identifier. Okay, so it's not required by PREA, but Minnesota does require it. What if I, as a submitter, put a 99 in there instead of a 0 or a 1? And that 90, that unique identifier never shows up on any document, ever, anywhere. It just doesn't show up. It's not part of the UCB. It's not part of any document you've ever seen, right? Either somebody walks to your abstract counter or they walk to your Torrens counter. They don't give you a document that says, this is an abstract recording document, or this is a Torrens recording document.
The law in Minnesota requires that it says it's an abstract document or a Torrens document.
Okay, so, but my point is you saw that, right, with your eyes. The system, it's either a 0 or a 1, but if I put a 99 in there, right, what part of your system is going to kick that back to the submitter and say, whoa, time out. I either need a 0 or a 1 in there. There has to be some check that's going to say, it has to have a 0 or a 1, or I'm going to kick it back to you. Right. The vendor has to do that.
Right.
So if there's no, just assume they screw up and there's no check. It doesn't happen. And it gets through. And it gets somehow into your system now, and you're looking at this, you will never know. You will never know if it's abstract or Torrens or where it should go. So to make life easier for the submitter, my idea was this, and I'm going through all these lengthy discussions to make it simple why I thought of what I thought of. So you have the PREA standard, and now you're saying by this Excel spreadsheet, I'm going to hand this to vendor A, go build me a system, and here's what you got to work by after I fix all the mistakes. Here's what you have to work with, and then build a system and start submitting documents to my county. And then I give this to a county and say, build a system, here's your rules, go build me a system. Now, you're going to have to test this somehow to make sure that it fits. It's legit. You're going to have to somehow test this. Presumably, you're going to want to test this. So, if instead of giving them an Excel spreadsheet, which is, it could be ambiguous. I think it could be ambiguous. 0, 1. They didn't say I couldn't put a 99 in there. It just says 0 or 1. So, either I assume that I can only put a 0 or 1, or maybe I could put a 99 and call it whatever I want. If you were to take the PREA standard, which is a standard which says, here's the guidelines, and there is this concept in XML called by extension or by restriction. You can take the PREA 2.4.1 standard and by restriction say, well, okay, I'm going to require unique identifier, and I'm going to make it either a 0 or a 1, and if it's anything else, it fails. So you can take the PREA standard, and by restriction, you're not changing the PREA standard. You're augmenting it with your rules. So you take the PREA standard, you augment it with your rules for each one of these document groups. Now you have your own document that is, in effect, the PREA standard with your rules in it. And instead of handing somebody an Excel spreadsheet, you hand them that. And it's a schema. That's what it is. But it's your rules built into and using the Prius standard, which is what its intended purpose was altogether. It was useful to many, restricted to none. So you use it in what its intended purpose was, and instead of handing somebody a document that says, okay, Minnesota standard is PREA 2.4.1.DTD and the MISMO signature thing that goes with it, and an Excel spreadsheet. There you go. Bundle it up. Here's your rules. You hand them the PREA as it stands, the MISMO as it stands, and your restricted version of the PREA, and you say, here's your rules. We're not saying you have to use any three of these in your system, but here's your rules. And the augmented PREA standard is unambiguous. You couldn't assume a 99 in there, because you're going to take that standard and by restriction you're going to say it either is a 0 or a 1, and if it's neither of those, it's going to fail. You're giving unambiguous direction to somebody who wants to submit and or receive. You're also, you now got a template for a test pattern. You can create a test system from that one unambiguous document and a schema. In short, that's my idea.
Dean, let me ask a question. In the past, when we were talking about aligning ourselves with PREA, knowing what standards PREA had, and there weren't a lot of mandated topics in PREA because states have so many different variations of what they have to do in those states, we'd always talked about each state needing to have, and what did we call them, extensions?
State extensions have always been there.
Have been really what, you know, I understood would be the mandatory requirements that exist then in a given state, such as Minnesota. You've got to designate whether it's abstract or Torrens, a big issue in Minnesota that wouldn't be an issue in most any other state in the country, and that would kind of be one of the extensions from the PREA standard that Minnesota would be adopting. And if I put it in that vernacular, that's kind of what I understood we were adopting with these rules. And I, that's what I was thinking, the standards.
I believe that in that vernacular, we're still saying the same thing. I'm just manifesting it in a document that's not an Excel spreadsheet. I'm manifesting that in PREA's own schema. It's still valid. It's still legitimate. It's just unambiguous and very useful.
So how would you tie them together?
For developers.
What would you do to write it?
What would you do to write it?
Mm-hmm. How would you present it in a paper document? What would it look like?
You could take these rules and write a schema based on what we've just approved then. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Well, you wouldn't write a schema. You're taking the schema and you're imposing the your business rule restrictions on it.
But we weren't given the right to write business rules. We were given the right to set standards.
Okay, call them standards then.
Okay, I'm feeling more comfortable there.
So you would be.
You'd be manifesting
the standards into the schema all in one fell swoop. And to put it on paper, you can do that any number of ways. There's a lot of tools out there to take manifestations of schema, what did you say, rules?
Standards
into a Word document or a PDF, and it flows kind of like what I'm seeing in front of me.
If these were adopted, could you have told us
that? Could I have told you all individually? No, but I did relay, my comments.
You talked to me about it, and that's what I shared here with the group.
My comments of the five people that commented publicly, I guess, on this thing, one of my comments was this very thing.
And you did speak to me about the fact that we should have some schema to implement our standards. That's what I understood.
I think I don't like implement because that has a technical connotation to it, but I would say relay
our standards
in a technical manner.
To communicate
our
standards in a technical language.
Okay, so now tell me, because I am the one No, I am one of the few who really
cares.
it really doesn't understand technology. I need to talk to me like, you know, Taco and Raft and that kind of thing. We set up the standards, and on this sheet it was very black and white to me. Yes, you have to have this. No, you don't have to have this. Yes, you have to have this. Mm-hmm. So the schema is what compared to yes, you can, no, you can't, yes, you can, no, you can't?
It is another version of what you're looking at, only it is something that could be used in code. Doesn't have to be. Could in code, in creating a system. It could be part of a software system. You're not telling anyone you have to use this in your software. You're saying, here's our rules in a technical manner. Read them, don't read them, we don't really care, but here they are. Now, my presumption that you're going to want to test receiving systems, I think, is still valid. And so to test a new receiving system, Billy Joe Bob comes into the state of Minnesota and says, I want to sell to every county, and I got the best system. And, oh, by the way, I do e-recording. Okay, fine, cool. But we need to test to make sure that it conforms to this Excel spreadsheet. Okay, that's cool. We can do that. All right, so I'm going to set my system up and start shoving documents at it that you, the commission, know to be good and bad. And I'll kick you back the bad ones based on this Excel spreadsheet. Okay, so they build a system, and they interpret the one and the zero wrong for whatever reason. I don't care. And they allow 99 to get in. You're saying it has to be a one or a zero. 99 gets through. So the person that's trying to get certified in the state of Minnesota has this document that comes through because, for whatever reason, their system let 99 come through when it should have been a zero or a one. And they get this document in front of them, and they're trying to get certified, and they're like, okay, I got a document here. I don't know if it's abstract or torrens. I'm going to guess. I'm going to let it go through abstract when it should have been kicked because it was a 99 instead of a 0 or a 1. The only thing they have to go on is an Excel spreadsheet sitting in front of them, and they have to read that to get certified. If you give them a technical option, if you give them your rules inside using the PREA's own standard, then they can't, there's no way they should have ever got that document in. It should have been kicked immediately. And what's more, a submitter who knows XML, how many of you know the machine tool trade? I do. Anyway, so in the machine tool trade, there's the same problem. All of these machines, they spin a big blade and they cut metal, right? They're all supposed to do it the same way. And you submit to them this thing called G-code, which is X, Y, Z, and how fast to spin. All G-code was a standard. Everybody was going to use G-code, so I could create my cool thing on a three-dimensional computer, and I'm going to give it to the machine, and it's going to cut my piece for me using G-code. None of the manufacturers use G-code the same. PREA, meant to be used by many, but a little bit different everywhere, right? Same thing. So the people that create these machines said, okay, well, we're going to have this thing called a post-processor. We know what G-code is. It's a standard. But each machine uses it a little different. So we're going to take our G-code and we're going to push it through this post-processor so that if I'm going to push my G-code to that machine, it works on that machine. That machine, it works on that machine. You're giving a submitter, by doing what I'm saying, by putting the rules into the standard, PREA's own standard, you're giving the submitters the post-processor. They can do whatever they want with their screens and their data, and they bundle it all together, and they want to submit it to Minnesota. You've given them a post-processor. They have to push it through this post-processor, which is your rules manifested in the PREA standard. And out the other side, either comes a good document, or it never makes it out of their submission system. So you're killing a lot of birds with one little stone. You have a mechanism by which it can create a test harness to test submit or receivers. you have a technical document that's manifested in the schema that you wrote it in.
So PREA has schema out there that's written already.
Oh yeah, that's what this is based on, actually.
And then you would take that schema and you would give the extensions to the schema, and that would be the Minnesota rules.
Right, and it's a document. Call it a rules document. It's manifested in a schema, but it's a rules document. Because you're going to have to post this Excel spreadsheet, are you not?
Mm-hmm.
So post them both.
Dean?
Yes, Pam?
Has PREA approved the schema yet?
2.4.1?
Is it on their website?
Well, 2.4.1 is, if you know how to get at it, yeah.
Is the schema for it?
No, not XSD, but DTD. They have a the XSD is there, but it's broken. It doesn't work.
And you're talking about using the PREA XSD to do your standards with, though, right? Not the DTD.
Either. I guess put them both out there. Make one with both.
Well, I would suggest not even messing with 2.4.1. PREA is close to 3.0, 3X.
This is based on 2.4, though, so unless we're going to wait and do 3 and redo this with 3, then we'll have to do something with the current one that we have available to us. But either DTD or XSD, it doesn't matter, because the XSD is broken, but Mark Ladd, I don't know what weight he holds, gave me the okay to make the change in the XSD to make it valid, because he knows it's broken, and he's already acknowledged that it's broken, and it's one change to make it unbroken.
So, and all it did was it took the DTD and just flipped it into an XSD, right? They actually didn't go through an exercise to restructure.
Correct.
Or to look anything.
Correct. And the one part that was broken is the actual document node that in the DTD allows you to put data into the document node. In the XSD, it doesn't. So they just put it, they just made it an any, and then it allows it. That was his fix.
So what is the cost of turning this from this spreadsheet to XML?
What did Pam charge you to begin with?
A lot of money.
Her price has been very good when she created this.
Has it?
It goes up infinitely to create schema.
Well,
yeah, I think that's one of
the beauty of
that's
this.
That's the reality, though, is we're trying to get things accomplished in an unfunded manner,
right,
with volunteers. So I guess my question would be is, if everyone thought this was a good idea and we wanted to move forward, what's the effort level to make that happen? That may weigh as much into our conversation as anything, because as much as we'd like to do it...
Well, and the reality is, the people that know me, the reality is I've already done this, but I did it with failed... what I consider bad, a bad Excel spreadsheet. So what effort, how long did it take me to do this? About 4 hours.
So what, why is it not, I want to get back to the failed spreadsheet.
Yeah.
So you guys can discuss that after I leave, but I would say I could, with a good spreadsheet, I could have what I'm talking about for your review in a day.
So what do you constitute a good spreadsheet?
One that conforms to PREA.
The enumeration issues he was talking about.
Okay.
Exactly what I was, yes.
Well, isn't that an extender?
No.
It just has to be, it has to be reworked, but it has to be legitimized. You have to take that enumerated list and either use the ones given to you or use other, which is one of the ones that's given to you, and then use the one below it to identify the weird ones that don't lie in the list that you're given.
So could you work on this with Pam?
Yes, I have. And I could again.
And so you're willing to donate that much time to our standards commission?
Yes.
That much effort?
Yes.
And then also include the extenders?
Yes.
Dean, this is Dallin from Simplifile. So currently, right now, in other states as well as in Minnesota, when our submitters use the system for electronic recording, they scan in the image of the document They then have to do a drop-down. And right now, in our drop-downs for our county, they select the doc type and indicate whether it's an abstract or torrent. In some cases, if it's a Fiddler system, there's a checkbox where they have to already do that. We adhere to the PREA standards already, and because the documents were approved a month ago, we're already well underway to turn on additional counties. In redoing the schema that you're proposing, what would that mean for Simplifile?
I don't think it should mean anything because there isn't any redoing of any schema at all. You're still using the PREA schema. You just have to, you could adhere to the Excel spreadsheet, or you could adhere to the document that I'm talking about. They mean the same thing. They're manifested separately and differently, but they mean the same thing. So if you're conforming, if you're literally conforming to PREA and you're literally conforming to the document sitting in front of me, this Excel spreadsheet, there is absolutely nothing that you would have to do different, period.
I should ask for Pam, too. Pam, would you be willing to work on an updated spreadsheet?
Pam, I'll let Pam speak for Pam. I know she's busy. That's why she couldn't even make the meeting. So we have some new things going on at work, so it's difficult.
You have real work going on?
We do have real work.
This is good.
Yeah. It's good for all of us.
Good for all of us. You're right.
I'd like to speak to the one thing. Dean, you are proposing changing the spreadsheet because you're saying that the recordable document type needs to be other. So for Simplifile, it will require changes for them because your document type can't go into a certain field. You'll have to change it to other, and then the actual document type will go into the other type field, I think it is.
Well, and
so
I'd like to...
Absolutely.
And I go back to my first comment. If they were literally conforming to PREA standard, they would never allow their drop-down box for recordable document type to be anything but that enumerated list. So how they got the release in their system breaks the PREA standard.
Well, between these four walls...
No, it does not break the PREA standard. Everything we do adheres to the PREA standard. And with this list, we've been preparing according to that document for submitters to also adhere exactly to that list.
So you're telling me release is in that enumerated document type?
We have been preparing to have our submitters adhere to all of the requirements that are on that spreadsheet. And then to work with our partners, like we're working, I hope, again soon with West Central Indexing on Hennepin County's behalf, to make sure that it's done according to the spreadsheet that has been put forward by the ERER.
It's bad, I'm telling you. You don't have to believe me. This is my opinion. I'm not getting paid to sit here.
I need to understand.
Explain to me again what you mean by bad, Dean.
You have to make some changes to the spreadsheet to make it legitimate with regard to PREA's standard.
And we were faulty in the fact that we used a code that was not numeric.
No. That was my example. Right. Recordable document type is a list. Mm-hmm. I don't have the list in front of me.
Okay.
But I do know that release is not in that list.
Dean, was this a problem on the first three Level 2 documents that we did?
Yeah, I believe it would have been, yes.
And this wasn't brought up when we moved forward with these new documents to kind of fix it back then?
No, you and I had a lengthy discussion on should we go with a new, for each UCB, should there be a new document by itself or should we group them together? And my recollection was let's group them together, and all of those that fall under the enumerated list would have their own, and all those that don't would have to go under other, and then you could put whatever Minnesota wants to put as its document name in the recordable document type other description, because you get an enumerated list. You can't vary from that enumerated list. And
so you're saying, oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, you get it. That's it. I mean, it's pretty cut and dry. There's a list. You use it or you don't use it, and don't call yourself PREA standard. So if there's a list, you have to use the list.
So then we could just say we're not PREA standard.
You could.
As every state out there can say that.
Absolutely. But.
But, Dean, you're saying if we fix the enumerated list on recordable document type in the spreadsheet so that we adhere to the PREA standards, then we would be okay. And then the schema would still be required, but this issue of not being within PREA standards is gone.
True.
Is that the only faulty thing on here?
I didn't get beyond the fifth. Once I find a problem, I usually stop trying to fix it, so I don't have the ability to fix it, so I stopped. Brought it to the attention of the people that could, and then waited.
The enumerated lists that are in PREA, a lot of fields we do not use. But, you know, if it just means reworking these certain fields that require enumerated lists and making sure we adhere to the standards, then I'd be more than happy to do that.
I would prefer to see us have something that we can say is compliant with PREA, coupled with the extensions or the rules that, you know, identify what Minnesota has to do. I mean, I think we've been trying to do that for some time. And I think that would be a real benefit, I would hope, to PREA as well, if there was a state that did that and made that available to PREA as well.
Well, and really, you're not doing anything to and for PREA other than saying, we get it, we got what you're trying to do, and we're adopting it.
Yep.
And that probably is the best compliment you can make to PREA. We get it. We're adopting it. It's good. We're using it. We're using extensions, and it works for us.
Let me ask, could this be done by our meeting in September?
Yes. I can speak for me. If Pam gives me a spreadsheet that is compliant, I can have the other part done by your meeting in September. For review.
How much time do you think it'll take, Pam? And do you need Larry and Chris for that, too?
I think I can bounce ideas off them, but I'd have to get it done and send it to Dean to approve before I can give it to everybody else.
Oh, I'd say that. You can give it to me to look at
it.
Well,
no, because I don't want to go through this where it's wrong and then I have to go back to the drawing board. So if I could bounce ideas off you and Larry and Chris, and at least we'll get it right this time around. And
do you have did you ever replace Marchek on this? You need a second technical person on here. I'm not saying it. Pam's busy. Pam's doing this for free. As I've told Mike many times, I'll convert your data and I'll test your data conversion, but I can guarantee everything I've converted is going to test fine. If Pam's creating it and she's busy, she's going to overlook something. It's inevitable. And if you have a second person, technical person, to review the first person's, peer review is the fastest, best way to get something done. And I've been doing it just because Pam and I email each other quite a bit. But you need someone else on this board that's technical to replace Marchek so this doesn't happen.
We're happy to jump in and help, especially because we're already underway with the Model 2s for Minnesota.
Yep.
What will that do to you, though, Dalen, if we can't get this done until the September meeting. I'm somewhat thinking, I guess, could we do something like a version if you wanted to launch next week? I mean, is there something pending that you could say, I could use this, and then there'd be another version that we would release in September?
You're asking the wrong guy. Looking at me, though.
And yeah. I've just invited our Vice President of Technology, Eric Blomquist, in, who also works on a PREA board and is very mindful of everything that happens with PREA. Our opinion is that it would stop the progress towards opening up all Model 2 documents, especially if we're required to do some different technical interface. Could you repeat the proposed recommendation, what we need to stop and what we would start?
Are you asking me?
Yes, please. Yeah. What is the proposal on the table? Can you re-summarize?
Well, I think there's two proposals on the table. One is to fix the spreadsheet to reflect PREA standard. And then two is to produce a technical document that is the PREA standard with the rules corrected, manifested inside PREA schema.
So Dean, are we talking about the PREA XML schema for e-recording, or are we talking about the PREA doc types? They're not really standards, but are we talking about the PREA doc type efforts? Which PREA efforts are we talking about? I'm guessing it's the XML schema. If so, what version are we talking about?
2.4.1.
Okay, 2.4.1. And what type of implementation are we talking about on 2.4.1? Because as far as being compliant with 2.4.1, Simple File is compliant with 2.4.1. and backwards compatible with any previous version of PREA right now. So if we're just talking about making all of the vendor systems compliant for 2.4.1, you know, that's a large undertaking, and that's going to take, that can't be a concerted effort that happens with, simultaneously. If we're talking about, I guess I need a little bit more background on what type of schema effort you're talking about undertaking. Are you trying to come up with a Minnesota-specific schema by modifying the PREA XML standard?
No. Do you have the standard in front of you?
Yeah.
Okay. Go to the element recordable document type.
Yep.
Read me off the enumerated list.
Well, I don't have that whole thing in front of me. I need to pull up my XML spy so I can check it out. But tell me what you're talking about there in the recordable document element.
The recordable document type. I just want you to read me the enumerated list.
Okay. I'm sitting on Dallin's computer, so give me 2 seconds and I'll get in there.
While he's doing that, I don't think that we are excluding or stopping anything from moving forward. What we're doing here is creating a tool that will assist, a technical tool that will assist in communicating the standards. But any system that is using 2.4.1 is going to successfully record a document. Some of the edits that are on this spreadsheet, some of the values and things like that, may be embedded in the application programs themselves and not be manifest purely in the XML document. It may not be edited or corrected there. So I don't think we're stopping anything here. What we're doing is enabling or creating a technical tool that'll better enable us to communicate to new vendors, for example, new submitters or new recording and receptive vendors, exactly what the Minnesota rules are. But those Minnesota rules could simply be put in place by, as Dean said, looking at the spreadsheet or by embedding those rules in application code, the reception code or the submission code. So I don't, I don't see this as, I don't see this as a stop.
From an implementation perspective, sorry, this is Eric. From an implementation perspective, I guess I wasn't here for the rest of the whole conversation. Which one does, which one benefits Minnesota most in the mind of those that are on the call? Does it benefit Minnesota most to have those embedded, or does it benefit Minnesota most to just have those listed on spreadsheets so we know, so that vendors can more easily integrate and leverage the 2.4.1 schema?
This is Janine, and my question would be, and maybe it's been answered and I don't understand it, is what makes the travel of electronic documents more invisible? The spreadsheet? I know, it's not the right word, Larry. The spreadsheet or the schema? I mean, our goal to begin with from the very beginning was that every county that electronically records can accept documents in this format, whatever format that is.
You're looking for consistency, right?
Right. In every county.
Yep.
So I want to know how, when my electronic recording comes in, I don't ever have, I want it at the point where I don't have to remember whether it is U.S. Recordings, Simplifile, any other hundreds that I hope are going to start electronically record. And I think it's the commission's goal, and I may be wrong here, that when we start having 60% of our documents e-recorded, that they just come in without ever anyone having to wonder if they're meeting any requirements. We want to set the path so that the tools are there for them just to come in. Is that not right? I mean, that's not a very sophisticated
your
statement.
Question, but your question is valid, and I think the answer is both. You relate to this Excel spreadsheet quite well. Software code relates to XML and schema quite well. So if it's not that much more effort, why not have both?
And so this is what I my next statement was going to be then is, we did pass this as our standards for Minnesota. So can't we go on and expand upon it by adding the schema, recommending the schema for
sure.
The state of Minnesota?
You can.
I don't know that we can pass a schema, but can we recommend a schema?
And getting to Janine's question is, we can't really undo what we did.
Well, we've already approved this.
Well, I mean, we could amend it, but I'm just saying this is the first version out there, right? So,
everybody ought to be able to have one or two changes.
Did the Simplify guy get to the document, recordable document type list that I asked?
Yeah, Dean, I'm confused as to what you're getting at there. So
well, there's
just tell me what you're...
Recordable document type is an enumerated list.
Yep.
And is release one of those enumerated values?
No, it's not.
Okay, that's all I wanted. Thanks.
So, Dean, I haven't been here for the rest of the conversation, so what does that mean to you?
Well, that means Minnesota has approved a standard that requires somebody to put the word release into the element named recordable document type if they want to record a satisfaction in Minnesota. But PREA does not have that in its enumerated list. It's a fairly simple technical issue I'm bringing up.
So what does PREA have for
that? So Dean, one thing there is, The enumerated list included in any PREA standard, whether it's 2.4.1 or anything that's preceding 2.4.1, they are not intended to be all-inclusive for every state and every county in the nation. Never were and won't be. That does not and should not be used to dictate or determine whether or not a state's or a county's implementation of the PREA standard is compliant with the PREA XML schema or not. I guess what I'm saying is...
Well, that's a different answer than I got from Mark Ladd when I asked the same question.
You asked Mark the same question?
Identical.
And what was Mark's response?
It's an enumerated list. If you change it, it is not the PREA standard. That's why other is in there.
Here's what happens is the XML schema won't validate because it's not in there, but states can extend the schema. So if we're just talking about extending your schema to include a release as part of the enumerated list, that's great. That's what we need to do.
Well, this is Bill Morey. That's exactly what the plan is here, and I totally agree with you that it's not the enumerations are not an exhaustive list. So
yeah.
It's not like
that's perfect. I'm sorry. I just got invited in and was trying to get caught up on a conversation that I hadn't been party to in the beginning. So,
but what I'm understanding is the spreadsheet is saying it's compliant to the PREA standards, and it's not because of the release. At least one issue, and that's the release issue.
True.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're saying, Dean, there may be others because you didn't finish going through all of them.
True.
Well, and this is Eric from Simplifile. I would guarantee that there's probably others. So
we should amend that piece at least.
Well, if
we want to write extensions.
If you take what they're saying as gospel and this enumerated list can be added to without breaking your compliance with PREA, then you have to take and make another enumerated list, including that one.
Yeah, and that's what I would suggest.
Or you take that enumerated list as it stands and you use other as your catch-all for the ones that don't match the enumerated list, and you use the one under it, which is called Recordable Document Type Other Description, to put your UCB name into. So,
this is Pam. Oh, I'm sorry, Dean.
Nope, you got two choices, and those were it.
I'm taking a quick look at the spreadsheet. It did look like on the other ones I did do other when we didn't meet the enumerated list of that value. And a quick look at the spreadsheet, but I do see other in all the other spots, so I failed to do it on the recordable type, so go ahead.
Oh no, you're sorry. I'm sorry to talk over you at all. This is Eric. We use other for in some counties we use other exclusively, in many we use it when it's not part of the enumerated list. So I mean, there's multiple ways to skin this cat and do it in a way that encourages e-recording. One of our, from a Simplifile perspective, when we look at it, there's not very many vendors whose systems are capable of receiving the recordable document elements and attributes. And so, in order to ensure that the XML schema can validate, we use other.
If I could offer a thought here, it sounds like what every state is going to end up with is restrictions and extensions. At the very least, Minnesota will have to do that because we have Torrens property. I believe that the only thing that's being talked about here is taking the standards that have been identified, interpreting them into the state restrictions or extensions as necessary, and correcting where they are found certain things that may deviate from the current PREA standards, i.e. the document type. I'm going to wonder out loud, Dean, to you and Pam, if you two were to undertake that exercise and come back to the commission with a list of things that you identify that don't conform to the standard, it might be nice to tweak before too much more water goes under the bridge. If that might not be a fairly short list when everything is said and done, and there might not just be a couple of points that need to be dealt with, but all in all, the standards are basically sound. They just need to be translated into restrictions and extensions to match the PREA standard.
I don't think you're far off. I don't think there's a huge undertaking here. I think there's a lot of...
Yeah, I don't think that would be a big effort either, Dean.
Mike, Mark? That's exactly right. The PREA standard was never intended to be all sizes and everything to all states. If I can compare it to a car, the PREA standard was designed to give you four wheels, the shell of the car, the transmission, and the engine. Now, what you decided to do within your states as far as the color of the car, the types of seats, those types of things, it was completely up to the states. And one of the last things that I did when I was president, I don't even know for sure if it's been done yet, is part of the standard pages was supposed to include these types of extensions so that when the vendors wanted to download, they downloaded the PREA, latest version of the PREA standard, and then they also would go to that state to pick up their extensions.
Let me suggest something here. I guess what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing is it sounds to me like, from what you commented about, Pam, there may not be too many items. What I'm hearing clearly is that we want to try and maintain our compliance with PREA. The issue that Dean is raising is that if we're going to maintain it, we really need to maintain it at that level that we've got it at and not do the extensions where, you know, we'd have to do the extensions now at this point with the naming. And let's see how many of those there might be. If we're only talking about a couple of those are going to be fairly easy to deal with. And if release happened to be the only one, and that wasn't in the item that is in the 2.4 anyway, I don't think that that's going to be a big issue even for Simplifile. And I think if we can bring this back to the September meeting, see what we would have in terms of those exceptions. And if there aren't too many, if Dean, you can go ahead and prepare what you would identify as the standard language and the technical terms then, if that's a schema, that we could have that to entertain then at the September meeting?
Yes.
I think that would be very helpful. It would make me feel a little more comfortable about what I think we all thought we were approving. And if we've got an issue, I'd rather deal with it now rather than 6 months from now. Now, if it proves to be something more major than what I'm thinking it is, then we need to discuss it in September again, too.
Yes.
Are people comfortable with that as an approach for this?
Mike, this is Eric Blanc.
Yes.
With the Simplifile. I just have one other thing, going back to the conversation we were having earlier. And I frankly agree with that approach that you're citing at the moment. But when we look at the PREA schema, one thing that needs to be said and needs to be understood by everyone, especially those that are going to be undertaking this effort, is that when we look at the recordable document element in PREA, and pretty much in 2.4.1 or any other version, you can set the recordable document type to other, and then you have a recordable document type other description wherein you can put in anything you want. You can say this is a release, this is a satisfaction. You can put anything, any text in there that you'd like to.
Right.
And that ensures PREA compliance.
And that's what I'm hearing Dean saying, that that's what he understood was PREA's intent for putting other in there, and
correct,
that we just may have missed the boat here and put release in a spot where it should have gone under other. And that's all
correct
that I think we're talking about here, quite honestly.
Yeah, and that is what PREA's intent was. The one thing that is of concern to us as Simplifile is that right now there are very few vendors in the nation that are able to digest that description. And when we send recordable document type other across, they don't read the description field. So when we talk about this, there are ways to implement with each county and each vendor that will ensure PREA compliance. It will ensure that the PREA XML validates. We do that today in every county that we submit to. We ensure that we follow PREA. We do at times have to find workarounds, like using the document type other and then putting stuff in the description. But we do ensure compliance with the PREA XML standard. Now, I guess it comes down to the question as to whether or not the state of Minnesota wants to try to find or extend the schema in a way that's going to work in every county with every vendor, which I think and frankly know that that is a very large and long undertaking or task. Or if you just want to say we'll use PREA 2.4.1 as it is and as it has been approved previously by the commission, and you know, just run with it and deal with the doc type differences that are going to occur from county to county and state to state. So that's all I wanted to say. So.
I don't care about the ones from state to state. I do care about the ones from county to county. I mean, that's what we're trying to get to here.
And that's what
county
I
mean. County to county inside Minnesota.
Yep, exactly. So.
Thank you.
Let me, we're running a little late here, and I apologize to everybody. I did not realize we were going to end up going so long. If people are comfortable, Pam, I'm going to ask if you and Dean can kind of put your heads together ASAP, and if you can see how many of these document types may be an issue in terms of if there's been anything else that we maybe didn't catch, and just see if that's the case, and then I will follow up with Dean about trying to convince him then to write the code for whatever it would be to put that into technical language for people to take a look at. I'd like to get that out to those of you at Simplifile, Bill, you and Fiddler and any of the other vendors to take a look at too before that September meeting.
Hey, Mike, would it be all right if Dave Stevenson, who's my Director of Integration Development, helps Pam and Dean in that effort?
Sure.
That'd be great.
And essentially what we're looking for is, from what I heard from Dean, is to just go through kind of a peer review, right? I mean,
right.
Shouldn't Pam just send this out and say, hey, everyone,
people take a look at it.
Kick the tires on this, take a look at it. Do I have a typo? Do I have this?
Right.
And then, and if you have questions, why is this? And then Pam can say, well, we decided to do this for this reason instead of having Pam relook at it, because she's already gone through it a million times, right?
And
the reason I wanted to suggest that Dave from Simplifile is part of that discussion is that he's actually on the XML, he's the co-chair of the XML work group committee for PREA, and I think he'd bring some significant value.
That would be much appreciated. That would be excellent. That I appreciate that very much. I appreciate that. Yep. Thank you, Eric.
And I also think it's important for the commission to understand that it's not that we're out of sync here. The standard approved on paper still works.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's just a matter of we're taking a next step to enhance it. Digital, electronically.
We're just on the next
version. We haven't committed to sin here.
No.
And that's what I said earlier. Everybody ought to be able to have the first shot. There's 2 point this. We ought to at least get a 2 point something.
Right. So no point to scramble back.
You know,
keyboards.
And I think we need to amend the standards when it needs to be amended, and that's
your role.
That's our role as a commission, is for people to bring things to us that need amending. And if
like Chris said, there already was kind of that public comment period that it was out there and it wasn't brought to light then. So we're just kind of redoing the same thing.
And it's good that it's caught now.
Yeah,
it's a good thing, but it would be nice to have known that.
To me, it's kind of we've run it through a spell check now. And we found perhaps just a letter out of place, and that's all that I see that we're really talking about here. At least that's what I hope is all we're talking about here. But that's what I'm hearing being brought to my attention, and I don't see that as a major issue at all.
I'd also say that in the future, if there are those issues, there ought to be a way to sort of discuss those offline.
Yes.
Rather than
everybody's time.
Well,
here.
It just, I mean, it's fine, but I think it can be a lot more efficiently done.
Oh, Ryan.
Yep.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it unfortunately reminds me of some discussions that we had 5-6 years ago, which I don't want to get at this meeting. That's not the right time and the place. So, and I apologize for that. I didn't realize that's what we were going to get into here today.
No.
I thought from my discussions that it was going to be just very simple and straightforward. And I guess I didn't fully understand what all of what Dean was.
It was because Mark came back to the meeting.
Well, anyway, if people are comfortable with that, let's move forward with that. And does anybody else have anything that we've got another item on the agenda about validation, and I'm prepared to carry that.
Should we hold off on the press release until September then?
I had a few suggestions anyway.
Just a few.
All right,
we'll hold off on the press release.
Let's hold off.
Okay.
She has all those suggestions.
I'll just type this up when I get back to the office.
For right now, yes.
And again, if people want to circulate them,
and we could
but
just
I think
circulate
we could
it out and then if
tighten it
okay
up.
With it,
yeah.
And then I have another suggestion on that. I had a note on that is I think that would be a good press release to send to all the counties' reporters' offices so that they're aware. I mean, are they waiting like maybe like Mark was to see when the standards got set, where they could go, and what they could do? Get to Model 2 before they, and all the documents before they start e-recording. So this will let them know as well what can be done.
I appreciate that comment. I was also hoping that we could use the MCRA listserv to send out the minutes and the agenda of this group and to keep us informed as to what's going on. Be much appreciated.
It's on our website, isn't it?
It's on our website.
Mm-hmm. I know, but generally people don't.
Right, I know.
They
don't send out a link when it's updated.
People
like to go to a link and not get attachments.
It also, because this press release wouldn't hurt to have, because if it goes out on that listserv, it would go out to our auditor treasurers and other offices, which would then keep them up to date too, I think, versus just sending it out to the reporter site.
Diane?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to call me, I can tell you a short way we could do that, so it won't take up much of your time.
Yeah. I mean, typically what we send out is a notice to agenda, and so Chris is kind of talking about a shortcut on it. Mm-hmm. But we send out an email.
But I can get it to the MCRA list or one person.
Sure.
Probably automate that process.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Can I ask another
yes.
kind of follow-up question? So the ERERC website should... We still have active, I think, or inactive, but we still have it's down. But we would post then these standards still to the website, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They were passed and approved. We have to come along and amend it. It's just like noticing you have one blue sock and one black sock.
I just want to be clear.
Yep.
Change it.
Let me just tell you, the number 8 on the agenda, the process for vendor validation for Model 3, we're going to carry that over, but really what it amounted to is, how are we going to get the other indexing systems in the state validated for those that want to do Model 3? And we need to talk about that, and probably what it's going to require is for those, if they do want to get validated to do Model 3, they're going to have to pay for their validation because we don't have money to do anything else. But give a little thought to that. We'll discuss it at a subsequent meeting.
Okay.
If nothing else, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adjourn.
Aye.
Did you guys, I'm going on vacation for the next week or so. So if you got the changes, I'm going to go back to the office.
Oh, here.
Changes here.
Okay. I can do it. Have a good vacation. Uh-huh. Can you read them? I think.
Yeah. We're thinking about moving one thing up.
Yeah.
Paragraph to make
yeah.
it, the quotes to make it a little bit more...
Sure.
You know, type of thing.